Welcome to True Crime in the Low Country, where we explore the darkest corners of the region's criminal history. Join our host, Frank Santarella, and co-host, CC News proprietor, Jim Karsk, an investigative journalist, as well as accomplished author, as they explore the murder trial, also multiple cases that have gripped and shocked the nation. It's True Crime in the Low Country, and the truth is just around the corner.
You're listening to WVFF 97.7 LPFM, Red Brick Patriot Radio in Cottageville, South Carolina. And this is True Crime in the Low Country, a feature presentation with Jim Karsk of Crime and Karsk. And Jim, say good morning. Tell us about your website. Tell us about everything. And then let's get into the drama and the muck of the morning.
Driving fast coming at you. How you doing?
All right.
Frank, I appreciate you having me on here, 97.7. I am a true crime journalist out of South Carolina, covering South Carolina, and I have it under CC News Network or crimeandcast.com. You can check me out on any social media. You can start with TikTok, where I have over 100,000 people who follow me and over 1.6 million likes on TikTok alone. So check me out for all your information that you want on South Carolina. And honestly, I do so much in the Lowcountry and down there at Cottageville, Charleston, Hampton, Colleton, Still, all these places. So.
Well, you know we love you here at WVFF, Jim. You're our, you come up with stuff that other people are just avoiding or not coming up with at all. So, we'd love the hell out of it. And we're still waiting for your visit, you know what I mean? You know?
I bought pizza
the day you were supposed to be here, and it's still in the oven. It's green. The mice have been eating it. But it's still there.
I feel bad.
Jim. A true crime reporter has no feelings.
Well, I'm not like any true crime reporter.
So hey, Jimmy, listen. Let's talk about the elephant that's in the room. And no. That's not nice, because the mugshot looks like she dropped a bunch of weight. Becky Hill got arrested, huh?
Yes, the one Mary Rebecca Becky Hill, the former clerk of court for Carlton County, who oversaw the sensational Alex Murdaugh double murder trial, was arrested this morning in Carlton County and booked into Carlton County Jail and is now facing multiple felony charges. Can you believe that?
Well, I gotta tell you, you know, the mugshot looked good. She looked nice in the mugshot.
I thought she did too.
Yeah, I mean, her hair wasn't done. All right. Anytime I've seen her, you know, she's all, you know, I've seen her at meetings, at different professional functions, you know, and she's always wonderful, polite. She's really a lovely person. But she's always dolled up, you know. She's dressed with her hair done and earrings and makeup and everything. And damn it, her mugshot looked damn good. And I'm sure that they just got her out of bed or something like that, you know what I mean? She didn't have time to get made up.
I started receiving multiple phone calls last night out of Carlton County. Sources close to these investigations are telling me that she was getting booked today. I couldn't find any information about it besides the information I was being fed last night. And then, so here's the thing, she knew she was, if people are telling me that, then she knew last night. So she was up, got herself ready. She drove herself over to the detention center. And this is SLED that has filed these charges, not Carlton County or Walterboro Police Department, but SLED has filed three felony arrest warrants for her, and they're The first two are misconduct in office, which is a common law felony. There are two counts of misconduct in office. They both have a max penalty up to 10 years in prison, so she faces a maximum of 20 years in prison for those two charges. And then the last charge is obstruction of justice, which is another 10-year penalty, max penalty, governed under South Carolina Code 169340. And we don't know at this point. As I said before we jumped on air, I'm still working. It's been a busy morning. I've got the charges. We're waiting to see what's behind those in the warrant. I have not seen the warrants yet. I just have the warrant numbers. So we'll see what's in the warrants here shortly. Should be up on SLED here any moment, but we'll, I'll just keep looking.
Yeah.
As we go. It's not up on SLED yet. So SLED usually posts it on their media site. I'll just keep looking to see what those warrants are, but as of right now, it's just two counts of misconduct in office, which you could probably say is due to the alleged mishandling of those $20,000 or so in funds that she was under investigation for when she was clerk of court. So that could be that. The obstruction of justice, I'm not sure what that is. There's a lot of different directions you could go on that. I know she had allegedly destroyed her cell phone when SLED had wanted a copy of her SLED phone, of her cell phone. So that could be that charge, but I'm speculating at this point. We'll have to wait to see what the actual
warrant is. Yeah. I gotta tell you something. It's anytime I've had interaction with her, she's always been very, very sweet. Never gave you the impression that she can be malicious. Now, all that being said, man, I think she was ill prepared for her job. She didn't realize the full gravity of what she was doing. And I mean, I think she was wrapped up.
Is that a good defense?
No, I'm not making a defense for her at all. I'm not making a defense for her at all.
You're not. What I'm saying is that a good defense that she didn't know how to do her job?
No. No, I don't think that's a good defense at all. I don't think, God's honest truth, I don't think she has a legitimate defense. You know, I mean, we know what occurred. We know what the law is. And it appears that, and I didn't see the warrants. I don't know exactly what the charges are. But I don't know how else to put it. I think she just got wrapped up in a moment and did some dumb shit, you know?
Yeah. So last year, the CC News Network, we were the first to report that Becky Hill was subject of what's called a surrogate investigation, which was conducted by the 11th Circuit Solicitor's Office in Lexington, South Carolina. And what that means, a surrogate investigation, that occurs when the South Carolina Attorney General delegates prosecutorial authority to a local solicitor on its behalf. So basically the AG was separating himself because he was very close to her during the Murdaugh trial. In fact, he was the one, you remember Alan Wilson, I referred to her as Becky Boo. So it was the right thing for his office to do. So this could be part of that, that surrogate investigation from the 11th Circuit, but she was arraigned in Colleton County. So there's a little bit of confusion going on what's really happening. She's got a lot going on in her life. I mean, wow. You know, her son was arrested back in fall of 2023 for wiretapping. You know, she gained national attention for that book she wrote. Turned out that there are some,
errors and omissions?
So that book was pulled, and then she had the allegations of misconduct and ethics violations. And of course, the South Carolina State Ethics Committee, they had close to, 100 allegations against her. And accused of using the $400,000 in funds, as I said. She was scheduled to appear, and now this is what's interesting. She was scheduled to appear in front of the State Ethics Committee to answer for those nearly 100 allegations back in December 2024, but that was postponed. And basically postponed because her attorney at the time had said that she was being investigated criminally, so if they could put this off until criminal charges are filed. So they did. And here's the biggest thing, I think, a takeaway out of today. Nothing. Zero charges on anything concerning jury tampering or alleged jury tampering.
Hold on.
I know. We don't know what the obstruction of justice thing is. I don't know. Maybe that's somehow encompassing that. I doubt it, but there's nothing in here about jury tampering.
Hold on a second. Hold on. I thought I saw something with that terminology. No, obstruction and misconduct. You're right. Becky Hill, the former Colton County Clerk of Court during the double murder trial of Alex Murdoch, was arrested Wednesday, according to state records. She was charged with 2 counts of misconduct in office and 1 count of obstruction of justice. At a bond hearing Wednesday, Hill was granted a personal recognition bond of $10,000 per charge, totaling $30,000. So she's out. She's home making pies, and she only has to pay that sum. All right.
She's at home listening to 97.7 right now.
No, she is.
Hey Becky, if you're listening, give us a call. Call into the station. We want to talk.
Yeah. Absolutely. We can give you the phone number. Hold on a second. We'll give you the phone number. No, we're not going out live. We're recording for future broadcasts. Oh my God! You got me. You got me. All right, but anyway, she only has to pay that sum should she break the conditions of her bond. She was deemed not to fight risk. She was deemed not a flight risk by the judge, having lived in Colton County for 25 years. Yeah. So she's out on her own recognizance. $30,000 bond. You know what $30,000 bond means? That means
$3,000.
Yeah, she had to write a check for $3,000. You know, and listen, I mean, I know Becky, I know the family. That's all right. You know what that is? That's one. They spend one less day on a weekend getaway.
So I was talking to Myra Crosby. She was juror 785.
Oh, all right. You mean recently?
Yeah, this morning.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So what she have to say?
Known as the Egg Lady.
Yes. What'd she say?
So this is interesting. She says, and I quote: "I rewatched her testimony, talking about Becky Hill. I rewatched her testimony, and Justice Toll called her out on having a private conversation with me, Myra, but they don't have that part in her charges. Still trying to protect the verdict. It's on the transcript in a video." Uh-huh. I think the biggest thing to take away from that is still trying to protect the verdict.
All right.
And that's according to...
I'm going to make a comment, and this has no bearing whatsoever on anybody involved in what I have to say, all right? All right. I want to preface this.
Here we go.
Whatever occurs in the surrounding Alan Wilson will be by the book, will be without repute, nothing, no wiggle room, no nothing. Everything he will do will be by the book. Alan Wilson is running for governor. All right? So it's gonna be perfect.
Your buddy Nancy Mace wouldn't say the same thing, but I agree with you.
Nancy Mace, again, nothing against Nancy Mace. I mean, you know, but I think you know that I walk around with $1,000 in my pocket looking for somebody that'll bet on two raindrops rolling down the window and which one will win. All right. I love to gamble. I love to gamble. And I will bet on two raindrops rolling down the window. I will bet on which one will get to the bottom first. All right. That being said, you would not.
I think we need to do what Raymond Burr and Alexander Hamilton did on July 11th, 1804. Just put those two out into the woods. Give them a couple of old 1804 pistols, and you walk 10 steps, and let's get at it. Let's get this thing done with.
Well, let me tell you.
I'm not promoting violence, I'm recanting history, people.
So. You, with what I just told you about my character and my love of gambling, I would not bet on Nancy Mace being reelected to the first district. How's that?
All right, we have a prediction.
Yep, it's not gonna happen. There's some strong. I mean, listen. I'm not saying she's a bad person. I'm not saying that I'm not polite to her all the time when I see her. She's great. She's been a good congresswoman for us. There are a lot of people that love her. There are a lot of people that don't love her. But I don't think she has a very strong possibility of getting reelected. That being said, is what it is. But that's why you're going to see with Alan, and listen, I called this thing with Alan Wilson a year ago. All right, I think he'd be McMaster's is not running again. He's made that known.
I don't think he can by law.
No, yeah, right. We have term limits on governor? Is that right? But anyway, no. I think Alan Wilson would make an excellent, excellent governor. He's. Just with the company he keeps with other attorney generals throughout the country, he rubs elbows with the best of them. So, I think he'd be great. But being that he has those political aspirations, you will see every T crossed and I dotted in whatever goes on with Becky, with Alex Murdoch. And with everything he does in his career, from now until election time, you know?
I mean, I don't quite understand the whole governor of South Carolina. Like, it only pays $106,000, and that may sound like a lot of money to a lot of people, but for that job, it that's how much it pays. Number two, okay, you get to live in a mansion, but whatever. And number three, it's actually the governorship of the state of South Carolina is what they call a weak governance, meaning he doesn't have as much power as you think a governor would have. And those powers were stripped away after the Civil War, to appease the Union, because South Carolina was such a standout in the Civil War, but especially with the governor. So a lot of those powers are taken away and given to certain committees, bureaucrats appointed by the legislature, that type of thing. So I don't get this, let's beat each other up to be governor. And there might be some power that I don't not familiar with, but I just don't quite understand it.
Well, Jim,
we're two years away.
You could say that about virtually any elected office. All right? I mean, look at what do you call it? Why would somebody spend $50,000 to be a county councilman that pays $18,000? All right? Why would anybody spend $250,000 to be a state representative that pays $1,000 a week per diem? You know what I mean?
It's power. It's all about power.
Yes. And none of these jobs are 9-to-5 jobs. All right? I know my state representative, man, I call him in the evening and I get him in the car because he's off to some kind of event or something like this. Right now, I talked to him yesterday, I wanted to get some legal advice from him, and I'll see you Saturday, if not before then. That's right. It's a social gathering on Saturday. So, yeah, these guys are out there 24/7, man. So, I don't know. I mean, listen.
I get it.
I don't get it either, because I think you have to have that desire, that bug, in order to play that game, you know, really. I don't know.
Well, this one's getting nasty, you know, because, you know, she's making some serious accusations. And here's the thing, you know, this will all settle down. If she ever runs for governor, this will all settle down after she officially declares. Because once she declares, she can't come out with these, in my opinion, defamatory statements. If they are not true, they are defamatory. Because once she makes that designation that she's running officially, then that limits what you can say about a competitor.
All right, here's the deal. I know, and you know, and everybody else knows that she's running for governor. All right? Now, Excuse me?
Not officially, though.
That's the caveat. That's the caveat. Not officially. Yes. What does that do for her? That allows her to campaign at various events without saying she's running for governor. I'm just a wonderful person, and boy, I tell you, you know, I would make you a good governor. I'm not saying I'm running, you know. I mean, she comes around and says, I'm not saying I'm running, but I would make a good governor, all right? And she can be out there campaigning without giving equal time to any other candidate that's running, all right? There's a lot of venues. If you turn up in these venues, they have to give equal time to all candidates. And I'm talking about specifically Republican venues, you know, a Republican convention, a Republican meeting, by Republican code, you can't support one person in a primary. You have to give them all equal time. Well, saying that she's not running or she's not officially running, she can be out there campaigning without any competition. And she'll do that right up to the last minute. And is it the wise thing to do? Yeah, she's a politician. You know?
Yeah.
So that's why they do that stuff. Also, there are also some financial reasons that they don't have to do their ethics and financial disclosures until they're officially running. So that's a whole another thing, but boy, politics stinks. Excuse me, did I say that? Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you did. Hey, you want to switch directions a little bit?
Go talk to me about, what do you want to talk about, Jimmy? Hey, we're here for another half an hour. I want to hear everything Jim's been doing since I have talked to him last.
Well, listen, there's a lot going on, especially down in the Lowcountry there in Hampton. I just did an article. It was not too long ago, but the Low Country drug epidemic, and we've talked about this on this radio station here before, in the Low Country. But the Hampton County Sheriff's Department apparently is ramping up its drug enforcement efforts, and they released a wave of arrest bulletins tied to trafficking and distribution in the area. And they arrested four guys on a lot of different aspects of drug operations involving cocaine, methamphetamine, marijuana, controlled substances. I mean, it doesn't get worse. There was four people here. One guy was from Farmville. He was had possession of intent to distribute and a drug called I can't pronounce it, but it's like a date rape drug. There was another guy, he's 32 years old, he was arrested in Hampton for cocaine, methamphetamine, firearms. There was another guy that was arrested in Brunson for meth possession and outstanding warrant. Another guy in Brunson, he was 62 years old, for trafficking marijuana and methamphetamine. Wow. I mean, you guys hear about that?
Well, I've heard little dribbles here and there about it. I mean, you have all the specifics of it.
This just came days after they found, this is still in Hampton, where deputies found a live grenade, methamphetamine, and outstanding bench warrants for two suspects that they had there. One of them had over 100 prior arrests in Hampton County alone. And he was charged with possession of meth, possession, intent to distribute, and illegal firearm possession. A live grenade. Come on.
Yeah. That's a little, the thing that bothers me about grenades is they're a little too indiscriminate, you know? All right. But,
I mean, what are you going to do with a grenade? I mean, it's all over the place. It's not just the Low Country. But, Florence County, they had a guy that was arrested. He had 6 pounds of fentanyl, which was worth over $3 million.
Here's a question.
That was in North Carolina, I-95.
These guys in Hampton that they got, were they all natives of the Low Country?
I mean, I don't know where they're from.
Was this indicative of residents of the Low Country, or were these people that came in from outside the area? You know what I mean? Not that it matters. We don't want it either way, but.
Now listen, one guy lived in Martinsville, one in Hampton, and two in Brunson.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to look at the names to see if they're long-term residents or not, you know?
Last names are Stanley, Folk, Cruz, and Strother.
I don't know. Sounds like they might have went to high school here, for all I know. Not good.
Here's what I think is interesting. And you have to kind of read between the lines on this one a little bit, and you have to know how law enforcement follows the drug flow. And especially at the federal level, let's say like the DEA, for an example. If the DEA is doing a drug enforcement ring, they're not going to go and bust the first person they see. They sit and they wait. And they'll watch, right? And I talked to a current private investigator who is also a former Deputy County Sheriff down there in the Low Country, and he and I were talking about this, and what they'll do, what the DEA will do, is they'll see, for an example, let's call it fentanyl, they'll see a drug pickup, but they'll know about a drug pickup, but without blowing their whole investigation by them going in and, you know, full force, guns blazing, what they'll do is they'll just make a quick call to State Highway Patrol or Sheriff's Office and say, listen, you've got a 2012, Ford Taurus, heading north on 95, he's got 3 pounds of fentanyl. Go pick him up.
Were you trying to give the visual image of a very boring automobile? Holy mackerel.
Yeah. So what they'll do then is the state highway patrol will go find this car, and they'll travel behind them and wait till they do something. Maybe they go, 72 miles an hour instead of 70, and they'll pull them over. And that's what happened. This guy got pulled over in Florence County. He had 6 pounds of fentanyl with him, was seized over $3 million. And he was a North Carolina man, and he was on I-95. I can't say for certain, but, for a state highway patrol guy to pull somebody over that just so happens to have $3 million worth of fentanyl with him.
Yeah, that's a little rich. That's a little rich.
That tells me that the DEA is in the Lowcountry and they're following the drug program.
I don't doubt it at all. I don't doubt it at all. Here's a question for you. That fentanyl is a class one drug, right? Yes.
Yes.
All right. Cocaine is a class one drug, right? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Heroin is a class one drug, right? Yes. Marijuana is a class one drug. Yes. Hey, what happened? What doesn't fit in there? What the hell is going on? Now, President Trump was supposed to get this squared away. I don't see anybody breaking their leg rushing over to eliminate marijuana as a class one drug. And let me be perfectly clear. I do not smoke marijuana. I don't like the effects of marijuana. I don't feel like I have enough control over my dosage. Anyway, all that being said, I think marijuana being a class one drug is the stupidest thing, the most racist thing. It's nuts. It's nuts. If they don't get this squared away, they will never, ever, ever solve any kind of drug problem, because marijuana being a class one drug removes all the credibility with the constituency, the people, all the credibility that drugs are no damn good for you. And I think that you can agree with me that fentanyl is going to kill you, heroin's going to string you out, cocaine is going to ruin your life, okay? All these class one drugs, right?
Right.
Will kill you one way or the other, all right? Marijuana, I can take a walk. I could walk, and I'm not a big walker. I could walk for about 5-10 minutes and run into 5 or 10 people that will tell me, will openly tell me that they smoke marijuana in a state where marijuana is illegal, in a country where marijuana is illegal, regardless of what any state tells you is legal, they're wrong, because federally, marijuana is a class one drug and illegal, all right? How the hell can we have credibility? How the hell can we allow law enforcement to prosecute and spend time where it's most required, on the fentanyl, on the heroin, on the... I have the name of the date rape drug on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember it. Oh, wait a minute. I have the date rape drug on the tip of my tongue? Who put that there? But anyway, it's what do you call it? That's why we have a problem with drugs in this country. And the cartel has come right out and said, you know what? As long as there's a demand, we're going to be filling that. We're going to be filling that demand. You know, as we're going to be filling that with the supply. If there's no demand for the drugs, it doesn't make sense for us to go through all the trouble to bring them into the country. Bottom line. And how can you build credibility when you got marijuana as a class one drug?
Stay with us on True Crime in the Lowcountry. We'll be right back after this short commercial break. Don't go away.